There are more than 11 million unauthorized immigrants living in the U.S.
The fact is, I broke the law when I entered into the United States.
Adults take the risk to find work, escape poverty or violence, but millions of immigrants came here as children.
We crossed on a car like regular people. I didn't have to cross the river or the desert or anything.
And they've lived most of their lives as Americans in the shadows.
We don't exist for the government. We don't exist for everyone else. We are living here, but we aren't.
The thing is, like, I'm American. It's a huge part of my identity, and I feel like an American kid with a Mexican heritage. My future and my life is here.
Yet for many unauthorized immigrants, there is no path to citizenship.
But I think that we all have the right to be happy wherever we are, no matter where we are from.
This time, on The View From Here, we explore the California dream, undocumented. Next, from Capital Public Radio. From Capital Public Radio, this is The View From Here, California Dream, Undocumented. I'm Julia Mitrich. At an outdoor farmer's market in California's Central Valley, vendors hawk the state's famous fruit and vegetables.
Everything fresh, everybody, everything fresh right here, right now, only in America. Everything here is sweeter than the first kiss, guaranteed, or your money back.
California agriculture has long depended on migrant labor from Mexico.
Pásale, pásale, tenemos las naranjas más dulces, pásale. Aquí todo está más dulce que el primer mes.
The majority of California's immigrants come from Mexico. This is a historical trend that sort of started with the U.S. recruiting Mexican labor to work in the agricultural fields.
That's Heidi Sarabia, Assistant Professor of Sociology at California State University, Sacramento. She's going to give us a snapshot history of Mexican migration to California.
It's just very difficult to untangle these two populations, right? California immigrants who might be second, third generation, but still have ties to Mexico. And then in Mexico, everyone knows at least one person who lives in the United States. So a lot of people, they know each other and they draw on these networks for a lot of things. And that's what continues the immigration stream, regardless of how much border control or how many walls. You have these personal, intimate connections that keep people moving back and forth.
Sarabia says historically, the border between California and Mexico was open, and the flow of migration benefited both. But then came the U.S. Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965. Immigration within the Western Hemisphere was capped, drastically limiting the number of Mexicans who could legally enter the United States.
So you have this stream of undocumented migration. And so throughout the 70s and the 80s, you have continued unauthorized migration. By the 1990s, you have this push to militarize, to really enforce immigration laws at the border. But after the 1990s, it really becomes a felony to cross, to be caught and to be prosecuted. There's more emphasis on really criminalizing people.
So Mexican immigrants continued to arrive well into the 2000s. But as of 2015, there are more Mexicans leaving the country than entering. Why is that?
Pew Research Center points to three reasons why we are at a net negative migration from Mexico. One is the economic recession of 2008. Just people were not finding jobs, so they were going back to Mexico or were not migrating in the first place. The second one is stricter enforcement of U.S. immigration laws along the U.S.-Mexico border. And the third one is increased enforcement of U.S. immigration laws within the United States.
Most of California's 3 million undocumented immigrants came from Mexico over the last several decades. And there are more U.S.-born Latinos than ever before. That may be part of the reason why public opinion of undocumented immigrants is changing. Here's the story of Bernardo Cordova Martinez. Like many other Mexican immigrants who come to California illegally, he had no trouble finding a job. Not long after that, Bernardo fell in love with Kara Davis, an American citizen. As Leslie McClurg reports, the young couple faces many barriers as they raise their family, including a lingering fear of deportation.
It's Monday night, one of the few evenings each week that both Kara Davis and Bernardo Cordova Martinez are home for dinner. Kara's frying pupusas.
Jaime, ya hemos cenado ahorita, ¿qué?
Bernardo's coaxing their 6-year-old son Jaime and 3-year-old daughter Sochi to turn off the TV, come to the table, and eat.
Pon la televisión, mijo. Vamos a comer.
Ya va a terminar.
¿Cuántos minutos más?
Muchos.
Muchos?
Okay, turn it off then, please.
In some ways, Kara and Bernardo are like other young couples with small children. Their days are filled with work, school, and family.
Mommy, I want juice.
Juice?
Yeah.
Or
juice?
Juice.
Here you go, Mommy.
But Bernardo is undocumented, and they know that their family could be torn apart if he's deported back to Mexico.
It used to be like something that I thought about a lot and was really scary and I stressed about. And now both of our attitude, maybe Bernardo will say differently, but I feel like both of our attitudes is like, well, this could happen. We could live 50 more years and it'll never happen, or it could happen tomorrow and no amount of planning will keep it from happening and nothing will protect it from happening. So there's not a reason to like be constantly worried about it.
Bernardo left Mexico a decade ago when he was 23 years old. Like so many immigrants, he was looking for higher wage work so he could send money back to his parents and 6 siblings. He paid a coyote, and after a harrowing week crossing the desert in sizzling temperatures, Bernardo landed in Tucson, Arizona. He caught a bus to San Francisco and paid a friend $80 to help him get false papers.
Lo que pasa que hay unas en todas partes hay personas que se dedican a hacer esos, social security.
The thing is, there are some people who make fake social security that are accepted by employers. And that's how I started working.
Within 3 days, he was washing dishes for minimum wage at a crepe restaurant in the Castro. He says he had no trouble finding a job.
Lo que pasa que llegué con unos amigos de mi pueblo, que son vecinos de ahí, de mi pueblo, y ellos...
The thing is that I came with some friends from my town and they work in kitchens. We'd say, I have one person here who just arrived. He needs work. Do you know any place that's hiring? You can recommend them and it's easy to start working.
The Pew Research Center estimates that about 28% of the country's dishwashers live in the U.S. illegally. Some immigration experts say that's likely an underestimate because it's difficult to track people who use false ID. We talked to some chefs who say it's more like 95%. Bernardo was living in a Latino bubble. He spoke only Spanish at work and at home, a 2-bedroom apartment that he shared with 7 other undocumented Mexican men.
En San Francisco solamente salía de mi casa a mi trabajo.
In San Francisco, I would only go out of my house to go to work.
Living this way, he was able to send home $1,200 a month. Most days, he dragged himself home at dawn after working a double shift. He curled up on the floor to sleep for a few hours before doing it all again the next day. The monotony of Bernardo's new life in the U.S. was interrupted when he met Kara. She dropped out of college after a year and took a serving job at the restaurant. He noticed her red hair. She seemed kind. One evening, he tried to talk to her.
Una noche que yo estaba lavando platos y ahí escuchamos radio mexicana, música mexicana.
It was a night that I was washing dishes and we had a Mexican radio station playing. She would go in the back to leave things for us to wash. And I saw that she liked Latino music, and I would tell another person, I want to ask her to dance, but in a joking way. I would ask if she was going to dance, and she wouldn't understand me. And that's sort of how we started to get to know each other.
We couldn't even communicate at all. Like, I tried to ask him my name, and my name is Kara. Kara means face. And so I was saying to him, like, oh, Kara, and then I would point at him, and he would touch his face because he thought I was trying to indicate, like, that his face was dirty, and I couldn't even figure out his name.
The two flirted awkwardly for months through hand gestures because neither spoke the other's language. Kara would lounge in the kitchen with the Spanish-speaking workers long after her shift. Gradually, she learned to communicate with them, and over the next year, a romance evolved with Bernardo.
But when I got pregnant and I was like, well, this is a terrible situation because he's going to go back to Mexico, and I certainly don't want him to stay here just because I'm pregnant, and navigate a world together seems too complicated. I loved him, but I didn't think there was a future.
Kara, now 22, decided to move to her parents' home in Davis, California, to give birth.
I decided it was better to move away, just sort of like out of sight, out of mind, because I didn't want him to decide to stay just because we had a baby together. Pues no quise que ese es un sacrificio demasiado grande. I knew I could be a single mom, and I thought that would be better than he thought he was too gentle of a soul to be here.
Bernardo had always dreamed of returning to Mexico, but he was falling more in love with Kara and the idea of his own family. They were expecting a son.
Para mí era muy mucha emoción, mucha alegría de saber que iba a ser papá.
For me, there was a lot of emotion and happiness to know that I was going to be a dad because it was going to be a boy.
También pensaba yo en México, en mi familia.
At the same time, I thought about Mexico, my family. It was a little scary to face the situation, to really live in the U.S. while not knowing English.
The young lovers longed for each other, and after a year apart, Kara moved back to the Bay Area, but they struggled to make ends meet.
Then at that time, she ended up pregnant with Xochitl. And when I really saw my daughter being born, in that moment, I decided that it was time to settle everything in terms of what I was going to do. That's when I decided to stay here with my wife and kids.
The family's bond grew stronger. 2 years later, a third child, Esmeralda Maricruz, was born.
Esmeralda! Look! Look!
The family lives in a trailer park just off the I-80 freeway in Davis. Their neighbors are mostly Latino families. The walls of their mobile home are painted yellow, green, and orange. A Virgin Mary statue adorns the mantle. Bernardo displays jerseys of his favorite professional soccer players. Children's drawings and school papers hang crookedly in the kitchen hallway.
So what do you want to do? Brush your teeth?
With two toothbrushes.
No, just with one is fine. That's a lot of toothpaste. Here, go ahead. Go ahead. Do I have to do it for you? Or can you do it by yourself?
I can do it.
Go ahead. Can you open your mouth, please?
No, toothpaste.
Can you please do it by yourself?
Okay.
Thank you. Let me see.
Good. I'm brushing your teeth.
Good job. Good job. That's good.
Bernardo's illegal status raises big questions for the family. Should they get married? What if Bernardo gets deported? And Kara was burdened with all the financial decisions.
Wherever we go, in like an official sense, I'm the one who gets a lease for an apartment. I'm the one who gets a loan for a car. In this case, the title for our home, the trailer, is in my name. I mean, that's an uncomfortable thing in a relationship that's supposed to be equal. And I think that makes him insecure sometimes.
Voy a sentir como impotente porque no dicen que nosotros somos machistas, pero de mi parte.
I feel incompetent. They say that us Mexicans are machistas, but I feel that I have tried to comprehend women, and even more than that, my wife, who I'm giving the opportunity to better herself. She has more opportunities than I to do things. I'm not going to stay at home all the time because of it. I'm going to keep working as long as I have the strength.
Bernardo grew up in a culture where gender roles are distinct. He says it's challenging not only to share financial responsibility with Kara, but also to be unable to represent himself at the bank or DMV. It's tough to do even simple errands with his limited English.
And you pretty much never speak in English, is that right? To each other.
No. ¿Que hablamos en inglés entre nosotros?
No.
No, ¿verdad?
Nunca.
Never.
¿Por qué?
I don't understand.
You do it.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
I know. Yeah, I understand. I don't speak. I know. No puedo tener una conversación.
Kara was raised with progressive American parents who value equal roles. She says she's embarrassed to talk about the details of her life with her friends or family.
Yeah, I mean, I live in this trailer park that's mostly, it's mostly immigrants, Spanish speakers, and then I ride my bike to school, and I'm like a different person there. When I'm at home, I'm cleaning, I'm cooking, I'm taking care of the kids. I think we have like a very traditional household.
Kara says the isolation of her life can sometimes bring her to tears.
But when I go to school, I'm in women's studies classes, and I'm in community development. So we're talking a lot about empowering communities in the shadow. And that would be this community to me. I mean, this trailer park and then the undocumented community. And maybe now I'm learning to walk more in the between the two worlds.
More than 4 million American children live in a household where one parent is undocumented. And it's difficult for Kara to know what to say to her son about the challenges they face.
I understand why they happened. I feel like they happened for unjust reasons, and that yet I have to defend my partner in life to the world. I have to explain to my six-year-old why the, you know, immigration could come and deport his dad.
Family and friends often ask the couple, why don't they just get married to gain legal status for Bernardo? There's no simple answer to that question. Bernardo would like his parents to be at his wedding, and applying for legal status is risky. As part of the process, he'd have to go back to Mexico, and if he's denied, Bernardo could be banned from entering the U.S. for 10 years or more. Plus, the process can be really expensive. So they'd rather hide in the shadows than take the risk.
De hecho, la quebranté desde cuando entré. Desde cuando entré a los Estados Unidos.
The fact is, I broke the law when I entered. I've broken it since my entry into the United States.
En realidad eso es, que no estamos en las sombras nosotros. No existimos para el gobierno.
The reality is that we are in the shadows. We don't exist for the government. We don't exist for everyone else.
Estamos viviendo aquí, pero no.
We are living here, but we aren't. But I think that we all have the right to be happy. Be happy wherever we are, no matter where we are from. I think we all have to be happy.
Both Kara and Bernardo say their struggles are worth it.
Hay mejor futuro pues por los niños aquí.
Aquí en Estados Unidos. Hay mejor futuro aquí en Estados Unidos para nuestros niños.
There's a better future here in the United States for our kids.
Each night the family gathers together before bedtime to pray. Jaime climbs up onto his father's lap and he asks God to protect his family.
Por mi mamá.
Por mi mamá.
Por mi papá.
Por mi papá.
Mi hermana Xochitl.
Mi hermana Xochitl.
Esmeralda.
Esmeralda.
También te pido.
También te pido.
Por las personas que no tienen que comer.
A las personas que no tienen que comer.
Que no tienen dónde vivir.
Que no tienen dónde vivir.
Que pasan fríos en estas noches.
Que pasan fríos en estas noches.
Todos los días.
Todos los días.
Amén.
Amén.
A veces pensamos que nosotros estamos sufriendo.
Sometimes we think we are suffering, that we are suffering a lot, but the reality is that we aren't. There are other people who are suffering more than we are.
Come on.
The parents carry their three small children into a bedroom that's painted turquoise. Kara gently places baby Esmeralda in a crib, and Bernardo tucks Xochitl and Jaime into a twin bed together. The parents tiptoe out of the bedroom, praying their foundation won't crumble under them.
Leslie McClurg reported the story for Capital Public Radio's documentary series, The View From Here. You can read more about Kara and Bernardo and see photos at theviewfromhere.org. You're listening to California Dream, Undocumented. This is California Dream, Undocumented, on Capital Public Radio's documentary series, The View From Here. I'm Julia Mitrich. Few undocumented immigrant adults in California have college degrees. Their children expect more. Undocumented millennials often expect to go to college, and recent laws make it possible, if not always easy. Laura Aguilar has been admitted to grad school and hopes to be a dentist in 4 years. But she worries her immigrant status may still limit her. Reporter Katie Orr Caldwell got to know Laura and her boyfriend in the summer before school began.
Oh, I love the view. It's a nice view.
This hike is no joke, you guys.
Here we are, it's like not knowing what we were getting into.
Yeah, I just thought, oh, there's a cool forest in Oakland, thinking it was going to be a very like urban forest, not like...
Not quite.
Laura Aguilar and Eddie Fernandez hike through the hills above Oakland. No. It's a windy midsummer afternoon. Though the sun is hot and the trail is steep, the young couple holds hands as they climb. In a few days, they'll mark the 6th anniversary of their relationship.
Tell me how you guys met. So we met that summer in between high school and college, where you're not supposed to date anybody, but we just like got along so well. I just remember like just laughing so hard and just the same kind of like humor and like quirkiness.
You were going to different colleges?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so given she was going to Riverside and I was going to Pitzer College in Claremont, it was close enough to give it a chance. 30, 40 minute drive, although I guess something we didn't really consider was the fact that neither of us had a car down there.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't allowed a car on campus my freshman year. And
I didn't have a license, so I just didn't have a car.
Did you know that Laura was undocumented?
He guessed.
Yeah, I guessed pretty
early on.
Early on.
Yeah.
How?
The giveaway was the fact that Laura was old enough to drive, but didn't have a license.
Okay. I was like, how did he know my secret? Am I super obvious? Like, I remember thinking, like, oh, gosh, like, you were the only person who's ever guessed. That really scared me to think, like, oh, my gosh, I'm really obvious. I should just not ever talk about how I almost got my driver's license to anybody.
I really don't remember how that all...
I was born in Guadalajara, Mexico. And I lived there till I was 4. When I was 3, my dad came to the United States. We owned a couple businesses, but they became bankrupt.
In Mexico, I had my own business. We have 2 retail, no, how you say?
Yeah, jewelry stores.
Jewelry stores. No, but it's retail. Woman's apparel.
Yeah, apparel.
Uh-huh. And I had like a mini hat factory for ladies.
Javier Aguilar, Laura's dad, and her mom, Laura Sanchez, came to California to work their way out of debt. They settled in Napa.
When we came here, I had the idea that we were going to go back someday. I never came here to stay here, but it didn't happen that way.
We always say it's going to be just meanwhile. It's going to be a temporarily. Just pay my debts and then I come back. It took me like 3 years or 4 years. And by that time, the girls were already here, of course. They already like 2 or 3 years in elementary and the school and the friends and the activities.
I didn't want it to be an illegal resident, and I never wanted for me or for my daughters. So I got a work visa. And after 7 or 8 years, they were going to give me my residence.
Laura's mom says her visa application went nowhere, despite years of working with employers and attorneys to complete the required paperwork. This left the whole family in limbo.
When I went to go get my driver's license, they told me that they couldn't give it to me because my visa was going to expire in the next couple months. I was 16, and in the next couple months, I would become undocumented. And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what that meant until I started applying for colleges. It was really hard because up to that point, I had considered myself a very normal, very American girl because I had lived here the majority of my life.
I think that since they were little, I told them both, you're going to finish college no matter what. Mm-hmm. You are going to college no matter what.
Both of Laura's parents were college educated in Mexico. They wanted nothing less for their daughters in the United States.
It was stressful. Some days I gave her everything and nothing for me, but I think education is like the most valuable gift that you can give to your daughters or your son.
Between Laura's junior and senior years at UC Riverside, President Barack Obama announced a federal reform called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. DACA defers deportation for young immigrants who were brought to the United States illegally as children. In California, it's estimated that more than 340,000 immigrants who arrived here before they were 16 meet the educational requirements that make them eligible for DACA. When Laura received DACA status, she obtained work authorization and was finally able to get her driver's license.
There's a whole protection from deportation, which is just, I mean, a huge burden taken off my shoulders, and I think for my parents as well. And with that comes a lot of sort of new strength, because I'm able to talk more freely about my status. I'm not scared to talk about being undocumented as much because I know that I'm protected. Nobody can send ICE to my house, which is really great.
And if I want them to be happy person, successful person, I really need for them to study, to be prepared. So that's why I always, if she wanted to be a dentist, go for it.
Laura didn't start college with dentistry in mind. She found her calling when she began volunteering with community clinics like this one.
Yeah, I do see that you're brushing her and probably you're doing up and down like this or this way.
Today I'm at the mobile dental clinic, which is kind of an RV turned into a dental clinic. And today we're parked behind the hospital. And I go around and teach the parents and the children about basic dental hygiene and why it's important and what diseases it prevents. Almost always it's people who can't afford regular dental insurance. Most of them are Latinos.
Exactamente así, muy bien. Ahora para dentro de este lado. Muy bien.
No matter what, I want to be an advocate for people who find barriers to their dental health, like not speaking the same language as a dentist or not having the same background in education. I can really identify with those with my family in that, and I see it a lot in my community, and that sometimes it's not just financial barriers that people face. It's also just kind of like social things that I think I'll be able to address really well.
There you go.
Okay.
Open up.
It's so important for them to know why you brush your teeth, because that motivates people more. So knowing that I can help them learn that, and as a dentist I can help them understand that, that really, really motivates me. Especially because I'm not a dentist yet, but I feel like I'm already helping their dental health even before I'm a dentist, and that's a really good feeling too.
Let me move this out of your way. There we go.
Back on the hike in the hills of Oakland, the conversation turns to Laura's immigration status and marriage. Neither Laura nor Eddie seems ready for that.
Our marriage is going to be based on love, and it's a factor that I'm completely aware of. Fortunately, there's been a lot of things where she's been in the right place at the right time. DACA's really helped kind of ease some of those pressures too. Because otherwise, you know, we might have had to make
a
decision much earlier.
I think that we know we want to be with each other for the rest of our lives, definitely. We definitely feel like it's just a matter of feeling ready to take on the responsibilities that marriage brings. We're trying to just take it, I guess, one step at a time.
Yeah.
Laura and Eddie are both 23 years old, and they may be facing the biggest decision of their lives as Laura enters grad school. Because she's undocumented, Laura is ineligible for federal financial aid. She qualifies for in-state tuition and fees under California's AB 540 legislation, but dental school runs about $80,000 a year.
If I don't get a really good packet, then that kind of that will put more pressure on us, because I'll have to, you know, get a private loan, which will carry on significant debt, a lot more. And so a lot is riding on that packet right now.
I asked Laura to call me as soon as she heard from UC San Francisco.
Hello. I have exciting news. I have received my financial aid packet, and I'm so, so, so happy with it. Our total budget, including tuition, is $81,379. So that's a pretty big amount. I am ecstatic to have received scholarships and loans. Absolutely over the moon ecstatic. This means so, so much to me.
But just hours later, Laura leaves another message.
Hi, Katie. So there's been a change in my financial aid since the last time we talked. It's not good news.
The university didn't offer her the low-interest loans she had hoped for. She'll have to find private loans for more than $35,000 this year alone.
And then on top of that, I think my most crucial issue is that I need a co-signer. And this co-signer needs to be a resident. And I just have my sister, my mom, and my dad, and we're all undocumented. And besides family, it's not really the type of question that you want to ask on anybody else, but given that I have no choice, you know, I did talk to Eddie about it. I feel terrible. And I can't imagine if I didn't have them, who I would turn to, or maybe how I would ever get this loan. It's tough. It's really stressful. But I just know I have to keep looking forward, keep focusing in on what I do have, and hopefully soon it will all be fixed. Bye. It's a whole new set of issues I'm going to have to deal with the private loan, because it's a lot to take out, and I feel pretty bad about having any cosign just because I feel like I'm dragging him into this debt.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the risks are there, like there's no denying it, but I mean, as long as we manage things, it hopefully won't be bad.
I kind of feel like us waiting was me kind of holding back on, like, not letting my status define something of my life. And now it's kind of, like, taking over, but it's okay. But, yeah, because it's a good thing that we get to move forward in our relationship, and it's a good thing that I'll be able to hopefully avoid having to take out more private loans in the future, and hopefully, I mean, a lot of other good things will come from it. So it's okay.
Eddie tells Laura it will be okay. He holds her hand as she cries.
That's always my first concern. It's just like, how is she doing? And fortunately, we didn't let it bring us down too much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like bad news, but it's not great news either.
I just want to be like my friends and everybody I've grown up with, like, I just want to have that life back. And I can't right now. And the thing is, like, I'm American. Like, it's a huge part of my identity. And I feel like an American kid with a Mexican heritage. Like, I really do feel like I was raised here and my future and my life is here.
On September 18th, Laura Aguilar received her white clinical coat, along with the rest of the class of 2019. At the ceremony, these 89 students were described as the most diverse class ever admitted to UC San Francisco's School of Dentistry. Laura is one of 56 women, 12 Hispanics, and just 3 undocumented students. On September 24th, she officially began.
I'm about to walk into my first class for dental school. I'm really excited. And here I go. I already see some professors that have been supporting me, which is awesome. And I'm here.
Katie Orr Caldwell produced this story about Laura Aguilar. Laura doesn't identify as a dreamer activist, but like those undocumented students who risk deportation to bring their dilemma to light, Laura sees education as the key to her future, and she's counting on immigration reform to provide a path to citizenship. Sacramento State professor Heidi Sarabia says the Dreamer movement is helping change public opinion about undocumented immigrants. A recent Pew Research Center poll says a large majority of U.S. adults believe that undocumented immigrants are as hardworking and honest as American citizens.
It's amazing how 20 years ago, in 1996, 60% of people felt that immigrants were a burden to the country, and 30% felt that they were a strength to the country. Today is the complete opposite. 60% of people think they are a strength, and 30% think they're a burden. And I think part of this switch is thanks to the Dreamer activists. And I think after the Dreamer movement, people started sort of seeing all these kids that were saying they were American just without papers, that they really belong here, that they love this country, and they just wanted the opportunity. That really, I think, changed how people saw the issue of unauthorized migration. They saw the complexities of not just Mexican workers coming to work and maybe taking advantage of the system and leaving, they saw that, you know, there were a lot of complexities, there were families involved, and there were also children. And I think that really shifts the conversation around unauthorized migrants. Now, what I think the Dreamers, you know, they were very successful in changing the framework around illegality to say that's dehumanizing. We really live here. We belong here. We contribute to this society. But they were not as successful changing the conversation about the border.
This same poll shows that although most Americans favor a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants like Laura Aguilar, about half also want better border security and stronger law enforcement. This is The View from Here, California Dream Undocumented, from Capital Public Radio. You're listening to The View from Here, California Dream, Undocumented, from Capital Public Radio. I'm Julia Mitrich. Immigrants seeking U.S. residency have a clear pathway through marriage. Being undocumented makes it complicated. Until recently, being gay made it impossible. As soon as same-sex marriage became legal in California, Juan Morales and Chris Guillen tied the knot. Their marriage was the last step in Juan's 24-year journey out of the shadows.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Inside Juan and Chris's cozy home in a Sacramento suburb, a sprawling vine curves around the edges of a giant picture window.
For the most part, everything that you see green is because of me. And since I adore planting and plants, and that's like a little hobby that I have on the weekends.
Another plant.
Another big plant.
This is the rest of the family. Juan, you can tell them about these guys.
These are my babies. All of them are 1 year old. They're all laying eggs. Some of them, we got them as very babies, chicks. And some other ones were given to us by friends. And some of the rare ones I just found on the internet, and then I brought them home without telling him.
I come home and I'm like, wait, there seems to be another. Oh, yeah, that's a new one.
And that's all our little chicken family.
Chris Guillen and Juan Guillen Morales have been happily and legally married for 3 years. But at the beginning of their relationship, Juan was keeping a secret. They take turns talking about how that secret came out into the open. Here's Chris.
So it was after I had asked him to be with me. I wanted to do Disneyland. I was all ready to book a flight because I had found an excellent deal to L.A., and I told him, I'm going to book us this flight because I want to, no, don't do that. And why? It's such a good deal.
I'm too scared to go on an airplane. And then he said, why? Because I don't have an ID.
And after enough prodding and arguing, that's when he finally told me what the real issue was.
I explained my situation. I came here in 92. My parents brought me over here.
In other words, Juan came from Mexico as a child. When he and Chris met, he didn't have legal immigration status.
And I kept a straight, calm face, but in my head, I'm like, gosh, darn it, what did I get myself into with this?
I waited also because I was kind of shy. I don't know why. I waited to tell you that. Probably because we were still dating and I didn't want to show any flaws in my part. I just wanted to show the best of me.
And I see the fear in his eyes and the look on his face, like I'm going to turn and flee at any moment. And that's what snaps me in my head, that you care about this person. Why should that really bother you? And that's when I realize it doesn't really bother me. It's not that big of a deal, actually. It's kind of another adventure to deal with. It'll be kind of fun. It's an undercover type thing. We can still do Disneyland. We'll just drive until we figure out what to do.
So let's go back to Juan's border crossing when he was 10 years old. He left his hometown of Durango, Mexico, for San Jose, California, to join his parents and siblings.
And we crossed on a car like regular people. I didn't have to cross the river or the desert or anything. We just, like in a car.
Juan didn't think twice about the car trip. He was eager to see his family in San Jose.
The house was always full. There was always a lot of music, dancing. We always had a good time.
Juan describes the Morales family as very close. Still, he was a gay teen growing up in a first-generation Mexican Catholic family where boys were expected to marry girls. When his parents sensed something different about Juan, they sent him to talk to a counselor.
They weren't really educated about it. They're like, if they haven't lived it, they don't know what it is or how to fix it or what to do about it. And without telling me it's wrong or telling me I'm going to go to hell or whatever, they just saw me like another family member. I had a very different life growing up as Chris did.
Chris faced bullying, starting in grade school.
The worst education experience of my life. Once I got to high school, it was a lot better. I wasn't as scared to go to school. And that's when I kind of started really figuring out, okay, so this is what it is to be gay. And it scared me. And I didn't want it.
And if school was hard, Chris's family life was no picnic either.
Because I was always told at home, being Catholic, oh no, you can't do that. Gay is bad. You're going to go straight to hell and whatnot.
Unlike Chris, Juan didn't face intolerance from family over his gay identity, but his lack of legal status made him feel inferior. Not having a legal driver's license meant Juan drove in fear of being stopped and possibly deported to Mexico. Then, in 2000, Juan got his first break on the immigration front. One of his sisters, a U.S. citizen, filed a visa petition on his behalf. The Immigration and Naturalization Service approved Juan's visa in 2001. Now all he had to do was wait in line until a visa opened up.
The following is a recording of the immigrant visa cutoff dates for the month of May as listed in Visa Bullet Number 92, Volume 9. Mexico Family First, 8 February 95.
I kept calling and seeing which year they were processing visas.
3rd, 8 October 94. 4th, 8 April 97.
Juan's visa is in that fourth category. The hotline says they're currently processing visas from April 1997. So that means people whose visa petitions were approved 19 years ago are getting them now, in 2016. Juan's visa was one of hundreds of thousands stuck in a more than 10-year backlog for Mexican siblings of U.S. citizens. After a while, Juan just stopped checking.
You feel like hopeless, like when are they going to speed it up so they can get to the year that I submitted mine so I can get the visas. I felt like it was never gonna happen.
Not having legal status really hit home after high school. Juan dreamed of being a teacher, but he got spooked when the college student loan form asked whether he was a U.S. resident. So Juan started working. The only jobs open to him were with employers who looked the other way when it came to checking immigration status. Juan felt trapped.
You want to be unstoppable. You want to be free to go anywhere, do anything. probably other people don't feel the same way that I do, because for them it's not a problem. But for me, that I always felt that that was something that was always keeping me behind others.
Back in 2012, Chris and Juan held a commitment ceremony with friends and supportive family members. But at the time, there was no such thing as legal marriage for same-sex couples in California. In 2008, voters had passed Proposition 8, a ballot initiative banning gay marriage.
I was absolutely floored. And I couldn't believe that the state that I lived in was still not liberal enough to pass something like that.
In the months since their commitment ceremony, legal challenges to Prop 8 had reached the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, Chris was waiting for the Supreme Court ruling on the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. On June 26, 2013, in a 5-4 decision, the High Court ruled that DOMA was unconstitutional and required the federal government to recognize the legal marriages of same-sex couples.
When DOMA was overturned, I was at work, and I was following that blasted decision. And a couple of my friends said, "Did you hear? Did you hear? They did it. They did it." And they were kind of crying, and I got very teary. And I'm like, thank God this country's finally doing something right. And I just kind of started shaking, and I was just very grateful.
The very same day, the Supreme Court declined to rule on California's Prop 8, legalizing same-sex marriage in the state. Days later, Juan and Chris joined hundreds of thousands of people in San Francisco for the annual Pride celebration. After the parade, the couple passed by City Hall.
I think there was a sign somewhere that said wedding ceremonies, and it was pointing an arrow. And then he said, "Oh, we should go inside and get married." I'm like, "No." I was kind of shy. So he said, "Let's go." Yeah, I said, "Yeah, well, we're already here, so might as well." And there were a lot of people.
Oh my gosh, there was a huge line of people, very excited. It was, I mean, you can feel the excitement and happiness and elation in the air. A lot of tears.
Chris scrolls through his Facebook feed to find his post from that day.
June 30th, 2013 at 3:55 in San Francisco. I put, "We did it. Me and my cuckoo bear are finally now legally married in the state of California." Expletive. "All you Prop 8 supporters, here's to eternal happiness and equality to all human beings."
Yes.
Through his marriage to Chris, Juan was finally eligible for a green card. Within weeks, the couple sat down with an immigration attorney. That's when they learned there might be one more obstacle. Immigration would require Juan to return to Mexico to apply for his green card at the U.S. consulate. The catch? His departure would trigger a 10-year bar to reentry. But remember the visa petition filed by his sister back in 2000? Turns out that saved him from having to leave the U.S. and get locked out. That was 2 years ago.
That's my ringtone. Hello?
What?
Yes?
Hi, Mary Waltermeyer.
Hi, Mary.
This spring, a few weeks shy of Juan and Chris's 7th anniversary, they get a call from their attorney.
Okay.
"I'm calling with good news."
Tell me the good news.
"Your status is permanent."
Wow. So they just gonna, from now on, we just...
"The green card should come in the mail within 2 weeks."
Okay, great.
"And then you'll be eligible to apply for your citizenship, I think, in September."
Thank you. Thank you very much.
"You are welcome. This makes me happy, too." Okay. Bye.
Bye.
What are you feeling?
Relief, happiness, overjoyed. That part's over.
It's done. He's good to go.
And no more worrying. I'm less stress. I'm letting the stress go.
Okay. Thank you.
Juan Morales Guillen is 34 years old. He was 10 when he crossed the border from Mexico.
So it's been 24 years.
24 long years.
There are more than 3 million unauthorized immigrants living in California, most of them from Mexico. As Professor Heidi Sarabia says, migration is a natural part of human life. And she says people will continue to move across borders, and that will change the demographics of the United States. Given what we talked about, it would happen after the 90s, you know, there's now this whole population of people who aren't as lucky as Juan, for example, who are stuck here in limbo. So where does that leave, you know, the millions of immigrants living with no realistic option for permanent legal status?
They are in limbo. Again, it's becoming more difficult to see something happening because immigration, again, has sort of become the issue that allows people to express their anxieties without sounding like this is really about diversifying the United States. They can sort of say, no, this is not about the change in demographics. This is really about a legal system of immigration. And so it's going to be very difficult to push these people to come to the table and really agree on a system that works better than what we have right now.
In California and across the U.S., immigrants are making lives for themselves and their families, despite their lack of legal status and threats of deportation. They wait for immigration reform that may never come and live with uncertainty about the future. You can read full-length stories about the families featured in this program, see photos and videos, and learn more at our website, theviewfromhere.org. Music by Blue Dot Sessions. The View from Here is a production of Capital Public Radio in Sacramento and is funded in part by the California Endowment. Thanks for listening.